Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us in this endeavor or want other information about the program or Jim Andrews, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Visit our archives there and listen to any program you may have missed. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. We will repeat this info at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. Our email address is jimandrews@thefinalwordradio.com. And now, Jim Andrews.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of the book of Proverbs. We're currently in Proverbs chapter 15, verse 14. But first, this personal word. Embedded in every blessing is a burden. For me, it's an enormous blessing to share God's word with you, friends. But with that blessing comes also the heavy burden of funding this broadcast ministry. We appreciate so many of you who share with us and make this possible. But we need others also to help us. If you're able to lift some of this burden, the announcer will tell you at the end of the program our contact information, and you can learn how you can partner with us in maintaining this broadcast. You can go to www.thefinalwordradio.com. There you can find out how you can contact us and contribute to the sustenance of this program. I do want you to know that you can always contact me directly if you wish at 503-699-9840. We always love to hear from our listeners, and we hear from quite a few of you, and you write so many encouraging notes. We're very, very grateful for that and for those of you who contribute. Now, we pick up with Proverbs chapter 15, verse 14, where Solomon tells us, "The mind of the intelligent seeks knowledge." He's talking about spiritual and moral knowledge, the highest kind of knowledge, not the knowledge of math, not the knowledge of chemistry, not to despise those disciplines, but to say that they're on the bottom shelf of what the Bible speaks of as knowledge. We're talking about ultimate knowledge, the knowledge of God that applies not only to the hereafter, but applies to living wisely, living with discernment, living with prudence here and now, the mind of the intelligent, as God defines the intelligent. But the mouth of fools feeds on folly, and that is a cultural phenomenon that is rampant in our days. So another differentiating mark between the wise and the foolish here. The mind of the intelligent seeks knowledge, the beginning of which is the knowledge of God. The wise like to learn and expand their horizons. They like to develop their capacities. They want to become all they can be. They are into self-improvement. The fool is all about trivial pursuits. That sets them apart. The fool occupies himself or herself with things that really don't matter in the long run. Such people may be higher achievers in the earthly sense, but what they're all about, I'm saying, in the long run, really doesn't matter. Though the fool may think he or she is concerned with what really is important. And as a matter of fact, most of them do. They don't know that all they're doing is feeding on folly. I think of so many of our pundits. Oh, I mean, they're educated, many of them, in the very best universities. They have elite degrees. Many of them have social pedigrees. And they operate in the stratosphere of our society. But they don't realize that so much of what they concern themselves about is irrelevant. I think in our day, this global warming thing, I don't care about the science of the matter. I don't give two hoots and a holler. Now, I'll explain myself. It's irrelevant. Do we understand we're on the Titanic? This thing is going down. I don't care whether there's extra heat in some of the rooms where a boiler is going to blow. The Titanic is going down. Let's get relevant. We need to get people off the ship. We need to concern ourselves about what really matters. First of all, there have always been climate changes. Look at the whole scope of things. We know that. Even if there is global warming, even if there is, let's say there is, I don't want to argue the point, but we're throwing ants at elephant problems. We are not going to turn it around. Let's get real and let's get relevant and let's start worrying about things that we can deal with, things that we can really change and things that we really know exist. There are moral problems that are killing our society. There are domestic problems that are just eating at the guts of this society. So if you want to really attack the problems that exist on this planet, start somewhere else. Don't start with a stupid thing like global warming. I love trees. I love green grass. But these aren't the big issues. No, I don't want people going out and destroying all of our trees and destroying all of our green grass. Let's have a little common sense, though. Let's deal with the things that really matter. The moral problems of this society, the spiritual problems, alienation from God, the domestic problems. Come on. Oh, well, I got myself on a little unplanned rant there. Not as linear or coherent as I would normally like. But the thought struck me. Those are my feelings. But they could be, I would agree, more intelligently expressed. But the fool feeds on folly. I just think of the garbage books. I think of the films. I think of the music. I think of the entertainment. I've mentioned several times I should be completely healed by the time you hear this broadcast, but I've been laid up for 2 months as I'm recording this, almost 2 months exactly, with a shattered femur. Happened on New Year's Eve. Well, as I have laid there in bed, I've seen a lot more TV than I normally see. I cannot believe the stupidity, the foolishness of those who inhabit our airwaves, TV. I look at it and I say, who finds these people? Who thinks of these dumb programs? It's not just that they're coarse. It's not just that they're filthy. It's just sometimes that they're just vacuous. And I say, who could watch these things? Who could consider these people celebrities? Who could possibly admire these people? Who could possibly want to emulate them? Look at their dress. Look at their stupid hair. They look like they just got out of bed. You know, here's a guy dressed in something that resembles a linen suit, and he's fashionable. He's wearing tennis. And I look at that and I say, how in the world could these people be fashion mavens for anybody? What about that hair? I'm not talking about the length of it. Forget it. Though sometimes it looks silly to me. But this distressed hair, it looks like somebody stuck their finger in a socket and this is supposed to be fashion. This has nothing to do with ultimate realities, but I'm just talking about fools feed on folly. You look at our culture, which is what TV reflects, and there's the folly that this society feeds on. And if people weren't watching it and enjoying it, it wouldn't be on the air because they measure the audience, as we all well know. I mean, think Jerry Springer. I mean, it's like going to the zoo. The only reason I ever stop on that channel to see something like that is just to stop and just wonder. I mean, it's like watching somebody drool all over themselves. You just look at it and say, you got to be kidding, but you don't want to stop very long. Well, that's what this is talking about. The fool feeds on folly, and I mentioned the garbage books. I go into bookstores. I'm just amazed. I go into an airport, and I walk in to grab a candy bar, grab a drink, or whatever, and here are all of these magazines, and these, I call them airport books. And I say, what's the use to read if this is what people are feeding their minds on? They may as well not read. I look at some of the stuff that kids are asked to read as part of their English classes. Some of it, here and there, is good. But some of it is just trash. Why have anybody read that? You want to promote reading? Is this supposed to feed the mind? This is idiocy. Think of the time people devote to silly recreational pursuits. I don't mean recreation is silly. There's a time for it. But I see people spending so much of their time. I see young people spending so much of their time out just playing. Think of people devoting their time, as I've said, to saving bugs and trees and snails and salamanders and trees and green space while their spiritual space rots from neglect and moral vices run rampant around them. They strain at gnats, they swallow at camels, they're preoccupied with trivial pursuits while the most important issues of life are totally neglected. 15, 14. The mind of the intelligent seeks knowledge. Do you want to know? Do you want to know who the intelligent are? As God measures intelligence, don't go check IQs. If you want to know who the intelligent are, well, go find those who seek knowledge, who seek higher knowledge, the knowledge of ultimate things, the knowledge of God, the knowledge of things transcendent. But the mind of fools, and we've got a culture of fools, and they feed on folly. Go find folly and see those who are following it. I think right about this time, I believe, not absolutely certain, but I think the Mardi Gras is going on in Baton Rouge. Folly. Watch the hundreds, maybe thousands of people out in the streets and all those goings on. And those people plan for that for months. I mean, elite people, pedigreed people. I've even known one of them, been in their home. If I'm not mistaken, they headed it up. And I couldn't believe that serious-minded people would have anything to do with such excesses, such outrages, such follies. But that is our culture. Well, in verse 15 of chapter 15, Solomon says, all the days of the afflicted are bad, but a cheerful heart has a continual feast. What does he mean? There is a certain sense in which mental attitude can make life, in the words of Ross, delightful or difficult. As much as I detest these so-called possibility thinkers, these positive mental attitude types, some of them in the pulpit, there is an element of truth, and therein is the appeal, and therein is the insight. There is, as I say, a certain sense in which mental attitude, and Solomon is saying that, can make life, in the words of Ross, as I said, delightful or difficult. If we are preoccupied with our afflictions, and that's what Solomon is talking about, if we make ourselves victims, we have a tendency to get our button stuck on life's negativities. And when we do that, we launch ourselves very likely into depression. And we put ourselves in an emotional posture where it is difficult to pull out of it, like a plane with a mechanical problem in a sharp dive. And then it's harder and harder to perform at peak efficiency, not to mention being unpleasant company for people to be around. All the days of the afflicted are bad. That's what Solomon is getting at. But, he says, by contrast, a cheerful heart has a continual feast. Cheerful people are people who've learned to look at the bright side and to enjoy good things at the table of life without always grinding their teeth on the bones. I mentioned a little earlier my accident, which has had me laid up, still rehabilitating as I'm recording this message. But in rehab, people would say, oh, Jim, brother, I feel so sorry for you. And I'd always kid them and say, don't feel sorry for me. I feel sorry enough for myself. But listen, I saw so many people in there who were so much worse, in the hospital first and then in rehab. When I took that fall, I knew I had done myself terrible damage. But also the kind of fall that I took, I quickly realized, my goodness, I could have been killed. I could have been paralyzed. My ministry could have been effectively null and void right here, this night. And it wasn't. I could be fixed. Okay, I'd have a lot of recovery time, a lot of painful rehab, which I'm going through right now. But gee, look what God did. For example, and this is what Solomon means when he says, but the cheerful heart has a continual feast. I don't mean this has been a feast. But here's the kind of thing, here's the kind of way we've got to look at things and not just constantly allow ourselves to be a victim. The night in which I was injured, which was New Year's Eve, first of all, when my wife called 911, we were able to get the emergency people out there within 5 minutes. I could have lived someplace where that would have not been the case. I could have lived in another time and era where these paramedics would not have been available. They were there. They were very professional. I was in a position, there was construction work going on in our home, and I was in a position where it was hard to extract me. But there were so many of these guys, big, muscular guys, who taped me up. I call it taping up. I don't know what they'd call it, but taped me up like an archaeological artifact so they wouldn't move me in some position that would further injure me because they didn't know the extent of my injuries and took good care of me. And they got me out of there, and the hospital was nearby. It wasn't 50 miles away or 100 miles away. I go to the hospital, and here's what I fear. It's New Year's Eve. Okay, in my mind, there have been 3 car wrecks, and I'm going to get in there, and whatever physicians are there, oh, nuts, I'm going to go to the bottom of the food chain. And so I'm going to lie here in pain and some distress and some uncertainty because I don't know the extent of my injuries. I don't know what all is wrong with my leg. It's going to be luck of the draw, doctor-wise. I mean, these are emergency room doctors. Okay, they'll probably get an orthopedic surgeon in there, but all orthopedic surgeons aren't created equal. Well, I got in there, and guess what? There was virtually no activity in that emergency room, and it was about, I would say, 9:30. I never knew for sure, maybe 10 o'clock. Wow. And they tell me, well, we've got an orthopedic surgeon here. He's working on a young man with a busted elbow. He'll be out shortly. Well, that's fortunate. I didn't know an orthopedic surgeon. I didn't know anybody to tell them to call. And it turned out the surgeon that I got was very highly thought of, and he did a great job. But get this. I'm talking about, and that's what Solomon's talking about, a cheerful heart has a continual feast. You know, you look on the bright side. I wasn't thinking about all the downtime and all of that and complaining. I don't mean I'm not capable of that. I mean that I could see the bright side of this, and we need to see it. The surgeon comes in, and he says, after he looks at the x-rays, he says, Mr. Andrews, this is major surgery. And he said, I really need an assistant, and we really need, if possible, to get on this right away. He said, the problem is that I need to find a sober one. Who the heck would ever have thought of that? But here it was, New Year's Eve. He thought of that immediately, finding a sober one. I said, well, doctor, by all means, let's have a sober one. We shared a laugh. In 15 minutes, he came back and he said, I found a sober assistant. This is all good. God is in this. I didn't get my neck broken. I didn't get paralyzed. I didn't have any other injuries. Bad enough, but a shattered femur. And before it was over, I'd have enough metal in me, as I say, to make a Humvee. But my dear friends, if we could see the hand of God in this, God allowed this injury. I could have whined over that from now on. And I don't mean I haven't done a lot of whining in life. And I don't mean I haven't done some whining along the way. Trust me. But I could see the bright side. That was good. And then I get to the hospital, I could see the bright side. I could see the hand of God in it, even though I didn't know why the Lord allowed this. But as I say, asking why is the most useless interrogative in the English language. We don't need to go around, why, Lord, why? Forget it. God has his reasons. Roll with it. And we rolled with it, but we could see the hand of God in it, and we've seen the hand of God since. And then we go to the hospital, and we saw people who are so much worse. And we go to rehab, and we see people who are so much worse. Just today, I was in outpatient rehab, and there was a chief of police from another suburb who was in a bombing attack, and 2 of his colleagues were killed, and he lost a leg, and the other was messed up, and he's had about 12 surgeries. I talked with the chief and expressed my condolences to him. He was in great spirits, turned out to be a believer. But you know what? I looked at the chief and I thought, my problem is minor compared to his. That's the kind of thing Solomon is trying to get across. All the days of the afflicted, that is, if you determine to make yourself a victim, you determine just to look at the dark side of everything, all the days of the afflicted are bad. They're just going to be bad. All you see is your afflictions. Yes, you've got afflictions. Certainly you have afflictions, and it's all right to call them what they are. But don't just dwell on them. Don't just brood over them. Don't just nurse your afflictions. Then all the days of the afflicted are bad. But a cheerful heart, verse 15, a good heart, has a continual feast. Because they look at all the realities and not just a few of them. And they can find the silver lining in the dark clouds. In verse 16, Solomon says, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than a great treasure and turmoil with it. What's he telling us? A man in the poorhouse who walks with God is vastly richer than a man in a rich house with big worries. Let's never forget that. You see, folks, poverty is a relative thing. Spiritual poverty trumps material privation. Worldly wealth plus the worries that go with it. For example, constant threats to property and person, not to mention the inability to trust the motives of friends and associates, who may be our friends and associates for no better reason than we've got money and they like to hang around it. but worldly wealth plus the worries that go with it, with no fear of God. To give one a sense of security in an insecure world makes for a life of emptiness in the midst of fullness. It's a pitiful paradox. For example, it's been found that so many winners of big lotteries later say their good fortune was their misfortune. And that's pretty much on target with what Solomon is telling us here. In verse 17, it is written, "Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox and hatred with it." The wisdom here is this: a humble home where food is scarce but love is ample is by far a better place than one of great means where hate, resentment, and bitterness flows as freely as fine wine. You know, people, and this is in the vein of the maxims above, we just need to learn to count our blessings. We need to learn to add instead of subtract. I saw a TV documentary on one of the cable channels a few years ago about the famously rich Gucci family of Italy, you know, the family of fashion fame. The family was torn apart by internecine warfare. One day, a visitor to one of their estates found the lawn strewn with high-fashion handbags. Apparently, the Gucci women got into a battle royale, and in throwing their handbags at one another, some flew out an upper-story window. Now think of that. These people had millions and millions. Can you imagine the unhappiness of such people? All their money and estates and assets of other kinds notwithstanding? One brother who had become CEO of the Gucci enterprise was even murdered by, if I remember, his wife. That's a classic example of the wisdom of this proverb. We've got to get our values straight if we would be wise. Verse 18, a hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but the slow to anger pacifies contention. If you have a tendency toward a short fuse, listen up. Blowing your top at people just generally stirs up strife, makes matters worse. Hotheads just put people at each other's throats. Several years ago, during the Christmas holidays, I was waiting on a parking space while a red van was taking most of the vacation to pull out and move off. I got there just as the driver was beginning to pull out of her space. 15 minutes later, she left the scene, and finally I had space enough to take the spot I'd been waiting on. As her van cleared and I made my move, I noticed a small red car up ahead of the departing van. As I occupied the vacated space, the lady in that car started blasting her horn. She was gesturing wildly at me. I got out of my car, walked back to hers to see what was ailing her, and as I approached, she lowered her window. She looked as mad as she acted. "You took my space," she yelled and gestured. "I'd been waiting on that for 2 minutes, which I could believe all right. Except when I had started waiting myself, this lady was nowhere in sight. Her hot-headed way just begged me to put her in her place. But I declined to pursue the matter with her, because one hot word from me was just going to pour oil on the fire. There was an urge to meet one hot word with another, and that is the way these things work. A cool response to an inflamed person will do a lot more to pacify contentiousness than fighting fire with fire. Well, thank you, dear friends, for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you, and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word, remember, is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us in this endeavor or want other information about this program or Jim Andrews, please visit our website at www.thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is jimandrews@thefinalwordradio.com. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this broadcast outreach.